to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you, everyone. At this point in time, I'd like to ask if there's any public comment. Do any members of the public wish to speak?
Commissioner Aguilar, there is no public comment at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to move on to our consent calendar. Do I have a motion for approval, or would any commissioners like to pull an item from the consent agenda?
A motion for approval.
All right, do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All right, all those in favor of approval of this motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
And Commissioner Aguilar, I do need to do a roll call vote and the roll call.
Got you, I will do that. Should I do a roll call again then? Okay, yeah. Please, can you have a roll call on this vote?
Sure. Commissioner Aguilar?
Yes.
Commissioner Callanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Drake?
Yes.
Commissioner Caldi?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Now I'd like to move on to Section B, our presentation agenda. We have item B1, Board and Commission Document Amendments.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. I am Christy Schmidt. I'm the Assistant City Manager, and I am here today with my colleague, Shannon Kern, who is Management Analyst in the City Manager's Office. And we're here today to talk about some changes to our boards and commission documents. And we're going to each of our boards and commissions and sort of explaining some of the changes, taking questions and feedback. These were approved by the City Council on May 16th, so you're the second to last group that we're talking to, but of course the best, so we are here to talk a little bit about those. So next slide, please. That's all right. There we go. So today we'll talk a little bit about the purposes and goals we had in recommending the updates to council. Shannon will go over some of the changes to the municipal code that are resulting from the changes, particularly for the Library Advisory Commission. We'll talk about the policy resolution, which sets forth some policies that are applicable to board and commission members, and then talk about our recommendation to the council to increase the stipends for participation in board and commission meetings. And then next steps. There we go. So we have 7 boards and commissions at the City of Goleta: the Design Review Board, the Library Advisory Commission, the Parks and Recreation Commission, the Planning Commission, the Public Engagement Commission, the Public Tree Advisory Commission, and the Historic Preservation Commission. And all of these were created by different staff members and approved by different councils at different times in the city's history. So we found that a lot of these had either had municipal code sections that were didn't align with each other. They had similar wording, but somewhat different. They were organized differently. Their wording was different, And in some cases, that was not consistent with our new zoning code for the DRB and the Planning Commission. So we were creating the Historic Preservation Commission, and we thought, what a good time to go back and look at all of our board and commission documents and kind of align those and make those consistent and have make some changes. So the goals that we had were, number one, to establish an ongoing role for our Public Engagement Commission. We have had a Public Engagement Commission for several years that resulted from a settlement agreement for a lawsuit on district elections. Now, of course, district elections have come and gone, and the initial scope of what had been delegated to that commission has now been accomplished. But we do recognize that there is a role for that commission on an ongoing basis. So what we wanted to do is, they were the only commission that weren't codified in the municipal code, so we wanted to add them to the municipal code. We wanted to modernize, simplify, and standardize the municipal code sections that are applicable to all of our boards and commissions to give them a consistent feel and make sure that they were more transparent and efficient in their utility to the public. We wanted to amend or establish required or desirable qualifications for our board and commissions. City Council had this for some of our boards and commissions, but not all of them. And they found them very helpful in recruiting and developing interview questions for board and commission applicants. And so they wanted, we recommended that we apply those to some of the other boards and commissions as well and develop those. We wanted to establish a diversity, equity, and inclusion related qualification for all of our board and commission members. That's a very important thing for the City Council. They've been doing, they have a diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative. They've been doing a lot of work in that area to try to make us a more equitable public agency. And so one of those was to establish upfront an expectation that board and commission members will respect the diversity of our community and uphold the interest in equity and inclusion in the provision of government services. We wanted to eliminate the extraneous bylaws. Some of these boards and commissions were established with resolutions, which were not in the municipal code, and so they kind of existed, and unless you knew where to go look for them, you couldn't even find them. You didn't even know they were there. And so a lot of our boards and commissioners were like, we had a resolution. So we wanted to get rid of those and make sure that the provisions applicable to our boards and commissions are easily defined in the municipal code and in a consolidated set of rules and procedures. And so that's the next one, which was we wanted to establish rules and procedures for all of our boards and commissions that went over things like the administrative standards and things that had been in all of those resolutions, just put them in one place applicable to all boards and commissions, consistent with good government practices. And then for the youth commissioners, which applies to this, I believe is there a youth commissioner on the Library Advisory Commission? No. Okay, well we have, that's right. We have a Public Engagement Commission, and on the Parks and Recreation Commission, we have a youth commissioner. And we wanted to allow up to 2 years for that youth to serve, and also remove the requirement that the youth commissioner be a student, because we were advised that could create a barrier for someone who maybe wasn't an active student but was a resident of Goleta and could bring a youth perspective to the commission. And we didn't want to have a barrier for those people to apply to be considered. And then we wanted to increase the compensation for board and commission members for the stipend. We'll explain that recommendation in a bit. So with that, I'm going to have my colleague Shannon take over and talk about the municipal code changes.
Good evening, commissioners. As Chrissy said, my name is Shannon Kern, management analyst in the city manager's office. And so this evening, I will be going over some of the general changes to the municipal code, as well as highlighting a few specific sections of Chapter 2.14, Library Advisory Commission, so specific to your commission. The full copy of the changes is included as an attachment in your staff report, as well as the two other resolutions and a copy of this presentation, one regarding the compensation and then the other resolution for the good government practices. So some of the changes overall included just a general cleanup and simplification of each chapter. As you know, the city's various boards and commissions were created at different times. So this created a lack of consistent structure and feel. So we wanted to standardize the sections of each chapter, you know, make it more predictable, easier to navigate, and so that each commission has the same sections within each chapter. And then where applicable, we also updated the wording to be more consistent. For each commission, the purpose and responsibility sections were also updated to have a more consistent flow and structure while still respecting the unique scope of each board and commission. In addition, we also ensured it was consistent with Title 17, and this is applicable to Planning Commission and DRB, as previously mentioned. And we also incorporated some of the language from the extraneous documents. So you'll see that we did pull from some of those documents and codified it into the chapter. So these are some of the general changes. Over the next few slides, I'm going to be highlighting some of the specific sections. I won't be going through all the sections, but there's a few that we wanted to highlight. So I go into the next slide. So the first section I wanted to cover is the purpose section. So we updated the wording, as you'll see in section A. And so that's just to be more consistent. This is an example of the consistent structure for each chapter that we made. Shall be to advise staff and city council. But in this section, we added section B to this to the purpose section, to which you'll find that it we kind of rescinded it from the bylaws, or it was from the bylaws resolution for the Library Advisory Commission. So we pulled from that extraneous document, but it's been updated to reflect more current practices and the kind of the current advisory role that the Library Advisory Commission currently serves. So I won't read it; it's on the page there. But yes, we did add B to the purpose section. So the next section I'm going to highlight is the qualifications of members. This is where you will find the language around diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's section A or letter A. This has been added to all boards and commissions, like Chrissy said, to reflect the commitment to DEI throughout our city provision of government services. This is also where you'll find the desirable qualifications. And so some of the boards and commissions already had listings of desirable qualifications, so we wanted to apply that to all boards and commissions. But we wanted to keep it broad enough to where a layperson could still apply and be considered, but have give some parameters around the desirable qualifications. And council felt that this also is very helpful when recruiting and developing interview questions, to give a better sense of what the purpose of the commission is and who is on the commission. So those areas are listed there. So library sciences or operations, multi-generational, multicultural education, literacy, ESL, public engagement, or civic discourse. And then continuing on for qualifications of members, D and C and D were existing. That those sections have not changed, but we did add letter E, which is just consistent with all the other boards and commissions. Nothing new there, but it just wasn't in the municipal code before, so it's been added. And the next section is the meeting section. So this is technically a new section for the Library Advisory Commission chapter. But it's been previously was reflected in the resolution that was rescinded. And so you'll see that the number of meetings has changed. So it reads the Library Advisory Commission shall meet 6 times per year or as needed to fulfill its duties. Previously, I believe it was monthly. We've designed this section and it's been applied to all the boards and commissions to allow for a little bit more flexibility when scheduling meetings for all boards and commissions. So the language as needed to fulfill its duties, it means that a meeting can be added when there's multiple agenda topics, or a meeting can be canceled when it's not needed. And so to really, you know, allow that flexibility to take into commissioners' time and staff time and all of that. But I do want to highlight that there is a provision in the resolution for the rules and procedures that does say additional meetings as needed, but it cannot exceed 3 without city manager approval. And this is a standard practice, but we did want to have it written down and make it very clear that if the commission did have more than 3 additional meetings, that the city manager would have to approve any additional meetings. And this is something that staff would take care of. And it's just to provide a little bit of oversight to make sure that the city manager is aware of you know, the time that's going into the meetings. But it's not to limit or impact, you know, if there is a need for additional meetings, you know, they can definitely definitely happen, just kind of giving some oversight there. And the last section I'm going to highlight is the responsibility section. So this is a new section, as it wasn't included previously in the municipal code, but most of these responsibilities will look familiar as they've been pulled from the extraneous documents. But they've been updated to capture some of the items that regularly come to the commission. Those are listed there, A, B, and C, on the screen. I won't read them all out loud. So that wraps up my section of the municipal code changes. So I'll pass it back to Christy for the remainder of the presentation.
Thank you, Shannon. So in addition to the changes to the municipal code sections for all of our boards and commissions, we also took those rules and procedures that were in the different areas of our the different resolutions and bylaws, and we created one set of rules and procedures. And we did that by talking to our liaisons for our boards and commissions, talking to our city clerk, and then feedback that we've received over the time from boards and commissioners and from our city council on, you know, things that might go more smoothly or policies that we should have. And so we pulled all of those together. Most of these are not new. They're either express or implied policies that have always been applicable, but we wanted to get them into one place so that we can give them to boards and commissions and everybody knows what the rules and procedures are, and that they're consistent from board and commission to board and commission. We also wanted to do this because our city clerk is creating a handbook for boards and commissioners. So this is something that our board and commissioners have been asking for some time, which is be great, you know, as a new commissioner, if we had a handbook that went through all of the rules and kind of gave examples and tips and things like that. So when we were looking at examples of other agencies that had handbooks for boards and commissioners, there were certain policies that were in those. And so we incorporated some of those into our policy resolution for council first, as well. So there are basically 3 categories of policies in these rules and procedures, and that these are going to go into the handbook. The first is good government principles. The next would be compliance with rules and laws. And then the third would just be administrative matters. And so for the good government principles, there is a provision in there about subject matter jurisdiction and making sure that boards and commissions understand that they should be limiting their agenda items and their discussions to matters that have been referred to them by the city council. And then clarifying the advisory role of bodies, just being clear that the City Council retains the ultimate financial and policy-making authority as elected officials, that's their role to have that ultimate say, so that the boards and commissions advise them, but the council is the ultimate deciding authority on those issues. Clarifying that board and commissioners should not direct or interfere with staff in performing their duties. This is a classic division of responsibility in local government. It also applies to the city council themselves, where policymakers deal with staff through the city manager and don't interfere with the performance of work by staff, other than to go through the city manager and request things like that. So that's in there. Establishing the expectation that members will encourage and not discourage broad public participation in board and commission meetings. Again, these are pretty typical good government principles, and just getting those down in writing. There's the policy and legal compliance requirements. The rules talk about complying with the Brown Act and the Public Records Act, and prohibitions on discrimination, harassment, and bullying of staff. And information technology policies talks about the need to comply with our, we have more and more boards and commissions that are being issued tablets to help with agenda management, so there's not this, all the paper that we have in front of us. So as we move into that new era, we knew we needed to get some information technology policies in place to protect those assets, but also the information of the public's information. And then talking about our code of ethics and conflicts of interest policies and laws and the need to comply with those, as well as restrictions on the use of public resources for political activities. That applies to all of us who do work for a public agency. We can't use public resources, including staff time, city buildings, to support or oppose a candidate or ballot measure. Local candidate or ballot measure. And then administrative matters, the requirement to participate in required trainings, and there was a recent Brown Act training that happened, but there will be other trainings that board and commission members need to participate in, talking about meeting agendas, how meeting agendas are set, how conflicts over meeting agendas are resolved, talking about the number of meetings and how those are held, quorums, how quorums are established, how we select officers, chair and vice chair, and I understand that there was an item on today's agenda about that. So, and then the standardized use of Rosenberg's Rules of Order Revised, which is the rules that we use for parliamentary procedure. So again, those are mostly existing rules, but it's nice to get them in one place. And now that the council has sort of set the rule, put the rules and policies into place, they can be incorporated in the handbook. So I've seen a draft of the handbook already going around, and I think once we get this, get to each of our boards and commissions, we'll be coming out with a draft of that handbook, and hopefully it'll be a great resource for particularly new boards and commissioners, but hopefully everybody. So the next area is compensation. We were aware that the compensation that we've been offering has been sort of static for a pretty long time for boards and commissioners, and this is designed to defray costs that board and commissioners incur in, you know, the performance of their duties. And so that has been $50 per meeting or workshop for a long time, and so we just applied a CPI inflator, an inflation calculator to that, and so we're recommending that our boards and commissions, other than the Planning Commission, which has historically and typically in local government has a higher stipend, we are going to be, there's a 50% increase from $50 per meeting to $75. And with that, we sort of have the next steps, which one, some of which have already occurred, that we have the Brown Act training, which is occurring, which occurred on June 1st, 2023, and our city attorney put that on. We have new citywide non-discrimination and information technology policies that council approved on June 20th. And we're going to be asking each of our board and commission members to sign acknowledgement of those policies. Those are two super important policies, non-discrimination harassment and information technology. So we'll be circulating those as soon as we get through. I think next week is our last meeting with boards and commissions. We'll be sending that out and asking you to digitally sign those. And then the city clerk will be creating that handbook. And then as needed, we'll be going back to the city council and recommending any changes if we feel that there are any that are that we need to put into place. But other than that, we're happy to take your thoughts, questions, if you have any.
All right. Thank you very much, staff, for that presentation. Do any commissioners have questions they'd like to ask at this time? Right, I see no questions. Well, thank you. It was a very thorough presentation. Is there any public comment on this presentation or public questions on this presentation?
Commissioner Aguilar, I see no public comment.
All right. Thank you very much, and thank you for your time and your presentation. At this time, we'd like to move on to item B2, the director's report.
So I'm going to just switch it up a little bit and do it from this this angle here. This time we have two items on the presentation agenda, but I was remiss to start the meeting after the roll call. We do have a item on vice chair and chair selection, and I meant to just notify the commission and also the public that we would like to defer that item to another date just because we're missing our chair this evening and our new member just joined today. So we thought it might be a better use of time to do that at a future meeting. So therefore our city clerk won't be joining us this evening and that item will be deferred to another commission agenda. And then just real quick, we did go through the commission document amendments. So hopefully if you have any additional questions, you can follow up with our staff and then we'll communicate with city manager staff as well. The next item before you this evening is actually the neighborhood services, the Goleta Valley Library Director's Report. I'll be presenting it today. But I did want to introduce somebody who's sitting out in the chairs out there in the audience, Ms. Diane Satchwell. I'll talk briefly about her a little bit, and she can say hello. But for those of you who can recall, in March of this year, our longtime library director retired. So Allison Gray graced us for many, many years, but then decided that retirement was the next stage of her career and her life. So we miss her. We look forward to talking to her again soon. But with that came a vacancy, and Ms. Satchwell has graciously decided to join us. So I'll start out here real briefly. Each month or so, whenever we have our commission meetings, the library director, or in this case, myself, a representative, provides a little bit of a presentation on the activities, things of interest that would be to the Library Advisory Commission. Particularly activities at the library. This includes, stats, programs, grants that are being applied for, and events as well. So the one that's included in your packet actually covers the time period between April and June. During that time, the Goleta Valley Library had over 43,000 visitors, and in that same period had over 1,700 visitors to the book van. The library staff checked out a total of 111,350 items. The book van has been steadily increasing and checked out 1,645 items. our overdrive checkouts, which are our essentially our e materials checkouts, were 106,000 and 34,467 for Hoopla, which is another service that the library offers. A big kudos goes to our incredible cadre of volunteers. We have over 171, worth a total of nearly 1,400 hours. There was a little over 6,300 computer sessions, and the book van handed out nearly 700 honor system paperbacks. And at the Goleta Library, similarly, we loaned out about 1,500 of those. The multipurpose room was rented 53 times with a total attendance of about 1,400 individuals. And then, as you may recall, back in April, we revised the lost and found policy, and we did take that to the City Council, which they approved at their June 20th, 2023 meeting. At the City Council meeting of May 16th, we did introduce the new ordinance that was covered this evening and associated resolutions related to the city boards and commissions. So I'm not going to rehash that, but we just put a little quick item in here to alert you of some of the bigger changes. And then lastly, like I said, on July 18th, 2023, the City Council approved the appointment of the interim library director, Ms. Diane Satchwell. We also submitted our budgets for fiscal year 23-24 and 24-25 earlier this year, and those were adopted at the June 20th City Council meeting, where the City Council also approved $175,000 of general fund money to go forward towards the book van. That said, during that time as well, we've been very successful with the Zip Books program. There's a kind of a little bit of a description on the program and how that works. It's actually a really unique program that I didn't know existed until about a year ago. But I think it's actually quite fascinating that it provides the public with the opportunity to get certain titles delivered directly to their homes, literally without, you know, with just a few clicks of a button, and then they can return them to our libraries for potential collection development as part of our review process. I will say that the full amount was expended before the end of the project deadline, so that's always good to hear. And then our supervising librarian also applied for an additional $20,000 for this upcoming fiscal year. So we hope to use that as another a way of complementing the offerings of the Goleta Valley Library. The Friends of the Goleta Valley Library actually, in tandem with the city, applied for a grant to help fund the book van expenditures. And so we're looking forward to hearing some results from that soon, probably some point in mid-September. Other items, the collections section of the staff report kind of talks about the work that Ms. Gray did before she left, and also the ever-growing large print and graphic novel collections that we've been very excited to continue to grow. And then probably of the biggest interest is just the amount of programming our staff does, and the number of individuals they touch as a result of that is quite astounding. In April, the library staff hosted a seasonal programming for Earth Day in Isla Vista, and it saw over 150 participants. This year's summer reading program, which is very, very popular, including my seven-year-old, began on June 10th and ended on July 29th. And just to give you a sampling, we included some stats for the staff report. But from 2022 to 2023, we did see a sizable uptick in activity, so we're proud to report that back to the commission. We went from just under 13,900 gate count to over 17,400. We saw signups at the juvenile category rise from just under 400 to just over 1,100. Teens, a little bit of an increase, 110 to 147, but adults also went up from 197 to 310. typically the summer reading program tends to draw a lot of our younger users. So it's nice to see this kind of show the activity growing and improving. And I think some of that has to do with, you know, COVID being kind of pretty much behind us as much as we can say that, but also too just kind of a resurgence in activity, particularly in our school-aged youth. So with that, I was going to have Ms. Satchel just come up and just say hello, kind of introduce herself a little bit. We're thrilled to have her. She comes with decades of experience through different entities, different types of governments. So I'll let her introduce herself very briefly.
Good evening. It's very nice to meet you all, and I'm really looking forward to working with all of you. My background is mostly with strategic planning and staff development. I've been given some tasks that we'll be doing with staff. The library will be closed August 24th, and we're doing an all-day staff training so that we can start getting our community engagement going and working towards those processes. Thank you.
So that will conclude the director's report. I don't know if anyone had any specific questions or follow-ups. Not at this time. Well, that was easy. I guess the next item we have is the, I'll let Ms. Ling bring that up.
Commissioner Aguilar, we have C1. 2023 and 2024 Library Advisory Commission meeting dates and change consideration.
Perfect. Yeah, let's move on to that item.
Wonderful. And I'll go ahead and just, it's a very brief item. So part of this was an outgrowth of the presentation we had earlier today that changed the frequency of meetings that the Library Advisory Commission has to have. One of the things that we brought up when asked about input was that we wanted to make sure that when the commission met, it was to discuss something of relevance and value, not that it hasn't been, but to truly make sure that the topics were you know, important and timely and all of those things. And so part of what we did is kind of evaluate how many meetings we'd had in previous years, how many we think we really did need, and kind of get a sense of what our work program will be for next year. And so with that, we had a little working group of deciding which months might be better or worse. And as the staff report calls out, you know, we're recommending that we keep the October meeting and then consider canceling the November and December meeting. And we can always call a special meeting if there's a need to. But I think a lot of the work that was done earlier this spring in terms of policy changes, I think we ended up revising a total of 5 was the final number. And then we've had some heady meetings recently, and then this one will be a little heavier. We thought it might be a good chance to, you know, take a little bit of a break and then hit the ground running next year. And so we have some items here we'd like to discuss with you. We recommended that for 2024 we have the February meeting, the April, June, August, and we tried to October and November as well, but we tried to not have it be 12 meetings, and then also kind of be wary of the fact that there should be at least one month where you can go on vacation and not have to even look at a calendar. So we thought July might be a good one. Typically, December and January are tough just because, you know, work and holidays and vacations as well. So we think it strikes a very good balance in terms of availability and usage of time without being overbearing, and then still meets the minimum of 6 meetings we're targeting. And again, if something does come up, you know, we can call a special meeting. And the other part was that sometimes we have a tendency to have holidays fall on a Monday, the first Monday of the month, and so that doesn't really align well with every single month. So we try to keep that in mind. And so if there's any questions on that or you'd like to consider something different, we're happy to take some input, but we just wanted to bring this item to you so that we can start planning for next year and for the balance of this year.
All right, thank you for that presentation. So to clarify, do we need to make a motion on a specific, like, to approve this calendar that you described?
Yes. Yeah, what you could do is make a motion saying, approve the recommended schedule, remaining schedule for 23-24 as presented in the staff report, something along those lines.
Perfect, thank you. Do any commissioners have comments or questions they'd like to ask at this time? See none. Is there any public comment on this particular item?
Commissioner Aguilar, I see no public comment at this time.
All right, thank you very much. Would someone like to make a motion on this item? You can sometimes say so moved.
So moved.
Is there a second on this motion?
I'll second.
All right, thank you very much. Staff, can I have a roll call vote?
Yes, Commissioner. Commissioner Aguilar?
Yes.
Commissioner Callanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Drake?
Yes.
Commissioner Caldi?
Yes.
All right, thank you. That motion passes. Since we'll be skipping over item C2 until our next meeting, the selection of vice chair, we can move on to item C3, the Goleta Valley Library Book Van.
Wonderful. So thank you, Commissioner Aguilar. With us this evening is Shanna Dawson. She's a management analyst in neighborhood services and has been incredibly helpful in trying to help us sort out the somewhat complicated nature of the book ban in Isla Vista. We've gotten a lot of feedback over the past couple of months from city council, from the county, even the Isla Vista Community Services District. And so what we're bringing to you this evening is really a recommendation to consider. We had told our city council that we would be coming to you for some guidance, some suggestions, and then ultimately a recommendation. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Dawson and let her get started with the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Good evening, commissioners. In fiscal year 2019-2020, the Goleta Valley Library received $200,000 in state funding to do a pilot program on the book van. That funding was exhausted in December of 2022, and the city's been covering the cost ever since. At the June 20th, 2023 meeting, Council adopted the fiscal year 23-24 and 24-25 budget, including $175,000 for continued book van operations, not only in Isla Vista, where it has been operating for 20 hours a week, but for an additional 10 hours of service in Goleta and the surrounding Zone 4 area. This includes Hope Ranch, the Nolita area, and to the west of the city limits of Goleta. There were some specific suggestions on particular sites that council wanted us to explore. Those were Positano Apartments, Girls Inc., the Goleta Community Center, Pacific Oaks Apartments, and Matilda Park. So currently, the book van has been serving 10 different sites in Isla Vista on a rotating basis over a two-week period, again, for 20 hours. Each stop has additional setup and breakdown performed by staff, as well as loading and unloading of the van on a daily basis. So while it's 20 hours of service, that's actually 30 hours of staff time because it includes that setup and breakdown, loading the van, et cetera. So in looking at expanding to 30 hours of service, that would probably be 40 to 45 hours of staff time, again, depending on how many stops, the distance between the stops, and grouping. So some of the stops are more child-focused or senior-focused. If you had several of those in one day and you had to load and unload the van to incorporate that, that would add more staff time. Staff visited each of the five sites that were proposed by Council for service, as well as some alternative possibilities, and we've laid those out for you here. So what each site really needs, there needs to be a lot of foot traffic. There needs to be a flat space because the book carts are on wheels, so they can roll very easily.
an ADA ramp or driveway to roll the book carts into position, but also to accommodate anyone with disabilities who need that. A set distance from the road for safety, you know, again, even on a parking lot, not being in the parking lot, being set back on a sidewalk or in a flat area, and a nearby restroom because staff is there for at least 3 hours on each site and the book van does not have a restroom. So we looked at all of those. It's also helpful if there are bus stops nearby for people who don't have cars and parking spots available for those who do have cars. So I won't go, I'm going to go through each site, but I won't go through every single thing. I'll kind of just touch on the end result for all of them. On Positano Apartments, the community is largely quiet during the day. It's a 118-unit complex run by the Housing Authority of the County of Santa Barbara. It's right across from San Marcos High School. And the one space that staff found that could probably work is very tucked back, I would say. It's not in an easy line of sight from the road or from any nearby bus stops. So with that, we feel that this location might be better served as an evening or a weekend visit. Alternatively, staff looked at the Turnpike Shopping Center, which is 0.3 miles away and has everything that we need to make a successful book van stop visit. That's the next item there. Again, this was not one suggested by council, but due to the proximity to some of the other locations it was looked at, the location in front of Dave's Drip House is perfect. There is a large flat area. It is well set back from the parking lot. There's a restroom. There's a ramp. There's multiple bus stops, plenty of foot traffic because the grocery store is right across the way. So we feel that could be a very useful site. Girls Inc., currently they already have a library on staff for their patrons, and their parking lot is really, during operating hours, it's really full of their staff. And then during drop-off and pickup hours, again, with cars coming and going, it's not an ideal place. The staff there was incredibly supportive of the idea and asked if they could help in any way. But just given the limiting factors here and the fact that they already have a library for their patrons, we don't believe that this is a good site at this time. The Goleta Community Center is an excellent site. Even right now under construction, there's that large area in the front with the gazebo. Again, there's plenty of parking, bus stops, foot traffic, flat area. While restrooms aren't immediately available, there are porta potties currently, and then once construction ends, people would be able to use the restrooms inside of the community center. So that's one that would be a good stop in the future. Johnny D. Wallace was not mentioned by council. However, it's very nearby to the community center. And we felt that if for some reason the community center construction, they needed to block off the parking lot or something, you know, they needed the extra space and you couldn't use the community center, Johnny D. Wallace was close enough by and still served similar residents that it would be a good spot as well. And again, it has all of the amenities needed. The one issue, that parking lot fills up very quickly. However, book van staff has looked at it and they think they have a way to go unload, park, come back, and make that work. The Pacific Oaks Apartments are located behind the Plaza Shopping Mall where the Albertsons is. And it does have a good spot. However, there's very little foot traffic, and it's not easily visible from either of the main roads. There's also not many bus stops in that area. We have not made contact with anybody at the Pacific Oaks Apartments property yet, but at this time, we don't recommend that as a viable site. Matilda Park was one of the ones that was recommended. However, it's currently in the design process to be completely renovated, and that construction is likely to start, I believe, towards the end of this year and go into next year. Because of that, we didn't want to go into this further. Just because of that restriction, we didn't want to start services and then stop them a month or two down the road.
And then also on that one, I'll just add very briefly, it's incredibly dense housing in that area. So you have a lot of apartment buildings, condos. And so there's already a lot of vehicles in that area to begin with. So, you know, much like Isla Vista, trying to find a parking spot doesn't come very easy. And also the Bookman's not small, right? So it's another kind of added challenge for it. And then if you're having people come to that site, like we said in other sites, we want to make it accessible to those who can walk and take the bus there. But also, if they are going to drive, you know, we don't want them circling the blocks multiple times.
Thank you. And then the final site that we looked at, again, not one recommended by council, but the Goleta Farmers Market, which takes place on Sundays. Again, prime location, has all of the amenities needed, plenty of foot traffic. This one would probably be more of a once a month stop rather than every week or every other week. And part of that is, one, due to any kind of holidays, but two, needing to speak to the Camino Real Marketplace Management. Already they currently have, like, you know, choirs who come in and perform in that area, or they do art shows in that area. So we would need to coordinate our schedules with them. So we definitely recommend that. But again, we would need to coordinate with the management. One of the things that the Bookman staff would like to look at is more event-based site visits. So these would be one-off kind of things. Currently, they've done site visits for the Isla Vista Recreation Park District, Earth Day, the Halloween, Children's Park Block Party, and visiting Goleta Valley Junior High School. They'd also like to look at doing pop-ups at the State of the City, the Lemon Festival, and the Lions Club Holiday Parades. Most of these events would take place on the evenings or on weekends, so some consideration would need to be taken into effect on that. But again, these are one-off things that typically happen once a year. Finally, too, in looking at the current 20-hour usage in Isla Vista, we looked at the average number of patrons per location per stop and the total hours spent at each location. Our effort here was to get the most bang for our buck. You know, where are we getting the most visitors? What time usage is best for the book van? In looking at that, those two tables, staff came up that, visits should last no shorter than 90 minutes, but no longer than 3 hours. So currently at this time, the book van visits the Isla Vista community. Oh my goodness, I have the Isla Vista Community Services District Community Center 6 times over that 10-day period. Each visit lasts a minimum of 3 hours, and 4 of the visits last 5 hours. So we'd like to lower those 5-hour ones because we're not seeing the number of visitors there. We could, again, when we go over the possible schedules, staff recommends that by reducing the amount of time spent there, we could accommodate more time at more impactful sites, or we could add time, we could add proposed new sites. So bringing that up. Again, we're still recommending doing the full 20 hours. In Isla Vista, we are not recommending taking services away, but just reallocating where the time is spent so that it impacts the most visitors available. Staff also recommends that the site visit for Isla Vista Elementary School take place on Thursday afternoons to coincide with early release of the school there. So, with that, let me share the screen here. We'd like to show you the proposed book van schedules. So this is the current book van schedule. Let me. Again, this is Isla Vista. This is currently where the book van's visiting. This is only showing the book van visits. It's not including staff time. On the proposed schedules, we do show staff time, so I just want to make y'all aware of that.
So, Ms. Dawson, if you hit view, I think you can hit full up at the very top and then do full screen mode.
Perfect. Much better. Thank you. So, again, you can see the amount of time here, these three at the top and these three at the bottom, that is spent at the Isla Vista Community Services District Community Center. Again, we're not suggesting that we stop visiting there. We're just looking at maybe reallocating some of the time. So that's the current site. All right, so we have, I believe it's six potential book van schedules. These were created by book van staff with the insight of the supervising librarian. So all of them have 4 days in Isla Vista and then 1 day in Goleta. Some of them have 2 days in Goleta because of a weekend site. So on these, I will defer to the commission. I can go through each of them.
Commissioners, I'm not sure if everyone got a chance to look at it. I got to look at this a little bit today just in preparation. Are there any specific schedules that folks would like our staff to go over in-depthly? Or any favorites that people want to hear more about?
I was just more interested in, of the options in front of us, what staff felt was the best schedule based on the patrons and their own staffing needs.
So staff at this time is recommending Schedule F. And let me click through to that. So this is Schedule F, and I recognize it's kind of hard to see on the screen there. But so it has 5 hours of service in Goleta and then 20 hours of service in Isla Vista. And it's two stops each day. And two of those days have focus stops. So on Thursday, that child's focus stop at Isla Vista Elementary, and Friday would be a senior focus stop at Friendship Manor. Again, this lays out the staff time so you can see the travel, the setup, packing, the lunch, all of that. This is the one that the book van staff felt you were able to cover the most ground. You would be able to visit the most sites, spend a good amount of time at each site. Now, council had wanted 30 hours, and this is 25 hours. So there's, you know, a little bit of a difference there. I know how to do math. But again, to keep that 20 hours at Isla Vista, this felt to the book van staff like the best way forward.
Is there a possibility with the extra hours to bring in another staff member at a limited capacity?
So the difficulty with the book van is that you need to have two people operate it just for security reasons, safety reasons, lifting heavy items. And then also you don't want to have someone just kind of out by themselves, right? You could have an unfortunate incident. It's nice to have someone there to be with you as well. The other part of it is, we did talk about one-off items, so maybe that's a way to kind of rebalance some of those hours throughout the year. It's just hard because you can't, in order to provide a really good service, it doesn't always fit into a nice little, packaged box. And I think what we wanted to do was to present something to the Library Advisory Commission that not only was doable, but was actually something staff really recommended. It's an easy thing to say, like, oh, we'll just have it there. And then you go there and you say, oh, wow, there's not enough space. There's not enough parking, shade, or a restroom. Well, when you're there for 3 hours, that starts to matter. And especially if they're there a couple of times a month, it starts to add up. So, we can always kind of play with this and try to do different iterations. But I think the whole purpose behind this item coming to the commission was to get a sense of, do you like the direction of that? And understanding some of the rationale behind selecting some of the sites over others. I don't know how much we could do. I mean, I guess another way would be to try to do, but then you get past that 3-hour max that we don't want to do. What tends to happen in that situation, my understanding is a couple of things. One, it's a little harder on the staff because you have the setup time and the breakdown time. And then if you're just kind of open for a long time, like there's no real impetus to get there on time, right? Because it's like a long open hour. So then, you know, maybe people aren't using it as efficiently as they would if they knew, oh, it's only there for 2 hours, so I better run and go do it, right? And I'll defer as well to Ms. Ling, who has some experience with this, if she chooses to chime in, or Ms. Satchwell. But those are the kind of the items that came up during the discussions. And so we felt like this was a pretty well-balanced approach to the time, because the one thing that we realized was that 20 hours really means 30 hours, so 30 hours means 40 or 45. And so that's a concern, too, on our side, because the city is more and more subsidizing the operations of the book van. I mean, it's fully subsidizing it at this point. That pilot program was wonderful, but it, you know, it came to an end. And so now we're trying to make sure we can provide the service that our patrons are asking for, but then also do it in a way that's balanced for the city's coffers as well.
I just have just one quick add on that is with that. Thank you for the clarification. I think the Goleta Valley Community Center is absolutely critical. I mean, it's fantastic. It's such a hub of that community, and as the bias of someone who grew up there for many, many different events, I think it's fantastic. The only other thing I'd recommend for council, conceptually, a farmer's market and some of these other areas are great for foot traffic. But, you know, for lack of a better term, you may have other sticky fingers. You may have, you know, citrus at the Lemon Festival that could be damaging to, obviously, the books. I know they're not sacred relics, but at the same time, that could be adding, you know, costing and effort for the staff.
It's a great idea. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think one of the things Ms. Dawson pointed out in the staff report was that the foot traffic is great, but it's also the accessibility by the major bus lines at the farmers market is a different, and it's a different, you know, it's a different demographic of people. It's not just one type. You know, you have a lot of different folks who really love their fresh vegetables and go there to hang out, and or they may be going to a movie or getting coffee or what, any number of things, going to Ross, right, or Costco. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, ugh. The reason why it's busy, you might as well take advantage of it.
All right. Well, if no other commissioners have questions or comments, please go ahead. Thank you.
Well, first of all, thank you for that presentation. That was excellent. This is my first meeting, so I want to ask like a clarifying question around like the rationale for why there's so much time spent in Isla Vista compared to other areas of Goleta every week.
So the original pilot program was solely for an Isla Vista site. It was actually to look at doing a single branch in Isla Vista. However, there wasn't a good space for it, and so that's where the idea of the book van came up. So the original funding that was appropriated was for Isla Vista services. And then as the city has taken on more and more subsidization of it, it became an idea, you know, this is a great thing, and it's doing such great work. Can we share that with the rest of the community? Mm-hmm. Which is why we're not only looking at Goleta sites, but also some that are outside of Goleta, like the Turnpike Shopping Center.
And just a little bit more, Commissioner Caldy. When we can probably do this at another time, we can spend some time with you looking at how libraries are funded. But part of it is what's called a per capita. If you're in our zone, there's a certain per capita amount, it's around $8 or so, that goes to each resident for library services. And so historically, Zone 4, which is the zone that Goleta Valley Library services, goes all the way up to Buellton, and it comes down to Gaviota, and then all the way to basically here in Hope Ranch is kind of the most eastern border. That money was always intended for servicing the zone, right? And so part of what Isla Vista had asked for over time, especially when the community services district formed, was they wanted more service, direct service to Isla Vista. Mm. They appreciated having access to our library at Fairview, but there was, you know, and no one would say that it's not an obvious thing to call out and say, well, you know, it's a little farther for us. And so one approach was to say, well, how can we get more services in Isla Vista? And that initial grant of $200,000 that was secured by our former assemblywoman, I think she was an assemblywoman at the time, or is it Senator? Senator Limon.
Senator Limon.
Okay. She's going to beat me up. We went to college together. It's okay. She was able to secure that, and the $200,000 was intended to try to see if maybe we can get the inklings of a branch library, as Ms. Dawson said. But quickly realized, like, one, you know, the space that's may or may not available, the cost of running a branch is significantly more than $200,000 in a given year, let alone just a one-time approach. So our former library director kind of, you know, thought of some different ideas, spoke to different people, and thought, well, maybe we could do a book van. And so that's kind of where it started. Since then, since the grant ran out, you know, there's an expectation that that service would continue. And so our city council in June decided they were going to fund it for this upcoming year and then kind of see how it goes year to year. Mm-hmm. But that's really why the focus, and it had been 20 hours a week. So the community didn't want to see that number dwindle. Mm. And so it was going to be at least 20. And then if we wanted to do a little bit more, that would be, you know, outside of Ivy. So that's kind of the history behind it.
Appreciate that.
I'm happy to be corrected, but that's kind of the gist I got.
Thank you. I have a couple more questions. Is that okay? This next question comes from the low visits per stop, stat 11.4. Has the team done like an assessment on why that number is so low? And as a follow-up, do you know how many of the people visiting the stop are students who also have access to the UCSB library?
So for assessment, I would say they relied more on experience of just seeing. So there is a location really just yards away. Is it Perfect Park?
Yes. So Commissioner Caldy, just to be specific, we're talking about the Isla Vista Community Services District Community Center stop.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few things on that side of the loop, if I may. At that side of the loop, there's really no businesses. For us, for the book van use, we're set back further from the sidewalk, and we're not allowed to open up the parking lot gate. We would also have to regulate the parking lot if it were open. So most of the businesses and foot traffic that we see are on the other side of the loop, across from, I believe it's the Magic Lantern Theater, UCSB, Embarcadero Hall, on that side. So Perfect Park is literally on the other side of the loop, and they see most of the foot traffic because of the bus stop is right across from that 7-Eleven there. We're across from the Amazon store there. And we're also literally closer to the street and sidewalk. We're able to set up in between that easement, whereas in the Isla Vista Community Services District Community Center, we are in the parking lot, and then there's the sidewalk, a planter, and a wooded gate. So we're pretty set back from the flow of traffic. And if you're in Isla Vista and you know students, they're just trying to get to where they need to go quickly. So they bike on by or say, like, hey, we already have access to a library at UCSB or CC and are not interested in book van services. But we do get a few people there. We have regulars, and we're happy to serve the entire community of Isla Vista there.
Sorry, and Ms. Satchwell may correct me if I use the wrong wording, but typically the type of books that you would find at a public-facing library like the Goleta Valley Library are going to be a lot different from an academic library on campus. And so it's not always, you know, a library is a library kind of thing. The other part of it is, you know, students may have access to the academic library on campus, but members of the public may not, or most do not. So it's not always, you know, like library is, you know, checkbox. It's can you use it? And then of what's being carried there, would you use it? Sure. I think that's the other part we've kind of learned over time is we don't carry textbooks at our libraries, and neither do most public serving libraries that are community oriented in nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Given what you just mentioned about that site, the drawbacks of it in Isla Vista, are there alternative sites that the staff has proposed in Isla Vista?
So they're looking at that Perfect Park location that's just on the other side of the loop. Mm-hmm. Again, it faces where more students are active. There's more dining facilities over there. So again, that's it's seriously like I think 10 yards. I mean, it's super close. So it would be within line of sight. Mm-hmm. And yes, that is one of the sites that we'd like to spend more time. It is a current site. It is on the current schedule. Mm-hmm. So we're just suggesting perhaps spending more time there. If I may,
we are looking at other proposed sites within Isla Vista. There are some other partners we would like to reach out to, and just developing a little bit more detailed focused stops with our current partners, and then also speaking to our other current partners about what other flexibility they may have in partnering with us. Our funds are limited, and we are trying some new things. So one of the things that is a qualm in rolling out a new service is losing the members that we already have, the patrons that are already attending. So switching things up very often, although is necessary, can be difficult, as I did have a patron come up to me with the very first book van schedule and says, "Hey, you're not here." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, please. Let me give you our current schedule." So it's a multifaceted issue that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing, and Commissioner Caldy, I don't know how much time you spend out there in Isla Vista, but if you were to kind of plot these out and look on Google Maps, or even better, we drove it a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's like night and day, the difference between 20 or 30 yards on one side versus another. I mean, there'll be businesses that are only open till 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and they're closed, right? And so there's not that generation of foot traffic or people interested in going there. And so you kind of always want to be kind of like how we talked about the shopping centers. You know, there's tends to be activity there because by chance, right? You're going to walk in. So the Girl Scouts figured that out a long time ago, and they hang out at Albertsons, and they know people are going to come out, and they know people like cookies. So not to say that we're taking a page out of their playbook, but, you know, you want to be where people are.
Right.
And rather than just saying, we're going to be here no matter what because we picked that place, if no one's going there, it's just you're just standing there and waiting, and maybe you're getting, you know, a half a dozen visits in an hour. Whereas if you were somewhere else, you could get, you know, 3 or 4 times that.
For sure. Now, to be clear, I support finding alternative sites in Isla Vista if the current site isn't working too well. I have one more question. You mentioned potentially expanding to Pacific Oaks Road, but that it wasn't an ideal site. Have you considered Gersh Park, and particularly on Saturdays when there's Little League baseball?
My understanding is that Gersh Park is a private park. I think Jaime Valdez may expand on that a little
sure.
bit.
So Gersh Park is a private park. It's owned by a foundation. The city does donate money to the park every year as a good partner, and they provide an incredible service to our community. One thing that I would be a little hesitant on is if you go to Gersh Park on those Saturdays, it's kind of a zoo. But you know, my daughter is 7, she plays soccer, and there's like chairs and, you know, balls and kids and stuff and running, and people take their dogs, and it's just a lot of things going on, and parking's already tough. So, you know, maybe if there was like off hours, but then you don't want to be there when they're off hours because there won't be that many people. But it just seems like they pack a lot of activity into those days, and so adding another item on top of that might not be the best best idea, but we could certainly revisit that and look at it. But I think for the most part, even like when we have the Lemon Festival at Gersh, they just close everything down. They don't even try to bother dealing with it. They just, mm-hmm. we're either having this or having that. We're not having both. And so not to say that the book van is the size of the Lemon Festival, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's probably at its limit in terms of on a daily thing. We don't want to just kind of complicate it even further, but we can certainly reach out to them and check in with them.
Sounds great. No more questions. Thank you.
And I just want to add to that point. So again, in the staff report, we stated there were some places that we needed to reach out to see if these organizations or these locations were interested. So if that was a location that the commission really wanted us to explore, we could put that in the report to council that we would need to reach out to them. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Commissioner, for those questions. Is there any public comment at this time on this item?
Commissioner Aguilar, I see no public comment.
All right, thank you very much. Do I hear a motion on this item towards one of the schedules? So I remember correctly, Schedule F was the staff recommended schedule?
Yes, sir.
Make a motion.
All right, is there a second on that motion?
I'll second.
Okay, can I have a roll call vote?
Before we do that, just to be clear, the motion was to support staff recommendation as shown in attachment F, just for the record. Okay.
Commissioner Aguilar?
Yes.
Commissioner Callanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Drake?
Yes.
Commissioner Caldi?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much. That motion passes. At this time, would any commissioners like to request future agenda items for future meetings? All right, I see none. I'll move on to item E, adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Give it a motion right here. We keep the streak going.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. Can I have a roll call on adjournment? No, okay, no need to roll call. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you, everyone.